Southerners are a storytelling people, but the truth is our stories rarely stay in just one form. Words turn into songs, songs turn into legends, and sometimes, if you're lucky, a whole town decides to build a weekend around all that collision. And for the last decade or so, that collision happens every year in a park in downtown Tallahassee, Florida, where you can hear a marching band echo off the government buildings of the state capitol. And then, as night falls, you can watch a punk folk band play with a full symphony orchestra. Today on Salvation South, we are taking you to Word of South, a festival that began its life in 2015 as what its co-founder calls a controversial literary festival. And every year since, save for the pandemic break that we all experienced, the Word of South Festival has turned into a laboratory for Southern music, literature, and identity. I'm Chuck Reese, and this is Salvation South Deluxe, where we try to unravel the tangled, tuneful stories of a complicated place, our place, the American South. Imagine you had a giant blender, and into it you put a music festival. Then you add a book festival, then you hit the puree button. What you would get is the Word of South Festival. It is a place where a high school marching band can open for the Violent Femmes, where a National Book Award winner might read with a jazz combo, and where a soul music legend from Alabama played to a room of slack-jawed witnesses. We'll walk the park with my friend Mark Mushton, a lawyer slash former politician slash novelist who, a decade ago, found himself in a predicament and turned that predicament into an arts festival that is unlike any other in the American South. We'll hear how musicians like B.J. Barham and writers like Kristen Arnett are expanding what Southern music and literature can be, and we will revisit the day when a Muscle Shoals legend named Donnie Fritz gave his final performance. And we'll close on a balcony overlooking Cascades Park, the festival site in Tallahassee, where we will chat with a young songwriter named Tommy Prine, who has his own ideas about what it means to be a Southerner now. Cascades Park in Tallahassee has a 1,500-seat amphitheater inside it, but the whole park actually sits in a kind of natural amphitheater, a bowl scooped out of the earth with trees and office towers and college kids all looking down on a green space that, for one April weekend every year, belongs to pure imagination. Now, when I first came to Word of South back in 2017, I heard a story about how this whole thing started. It was something to do with city government and a slush fund and one stubborn city commissioner who loved books. Let's talk to Mark Mushton.
Yes, sir. I was a city commissioner in Tallahassee for 10 years, and I had my first and my second novel published while I was a commissioner, I got invited to a lot of literary festivals around the country. I'd never been to one. And so I went to these things in, L.A. and Nashville. I said, man, we should do this in Tallahassee.
There's a reason most people don't start a festival while they're still in office. But Mark had an ace up his sleeve. Well, that isn't really an accurate characterization. It was more like a hot potato.
While I was on the commission, the other commissioners passed something that was called deferred compensation. And basically, we gave ourselves a pay raise, but I voted against it. I mean, I knew what the salary was when I got there.
Item 17 was what it was called on the agenda of a Tallahassee City Commission meeting in 2005. The city charter had a cap on the salaries paid to city commissioners. But to give themselves a pay raise without the trouble of amending the charter, they voted that a quote-unquote deferred compensation of approximately $20,000 per year would be paid into the account of each commissioner. Now, the only person on the commission to oppose this boondoggle was Mark, but he was outvoted 4-1.
A few years later, the public sort of caught on to this, and it became very controversial, and it got shut down. But I had this money that was in my name. I never wanted it. I never voted for it. So when I didn't run again for office, I went to, said, I'm going to donate this to try and start the festival. And so I go and meet with the Visit Tallahassee, which is the tourist arm, of the county government, and said, hey, I'd like to contribute $100,000 to start this. Would you guys match it? And they said, yeah. And so so I go to the, it has to go to the county commission then. So I met with all these commissioners. I know them, so we go and they're, yeah, great idea. Let's do it. And I get to the meeting when they're going to consider it. And I see these conservative talk show host guys I know and say, well, hey, what are y'all doing there? Oh, we're opposed to this. This is tainted money, And so one by one, I'm watching the commissioners fold.
Controversial literary festival. That was the headline.
Which is probably the only time in the human history those words have been said together.
Somehow, after the dust settled, the match came through and Word of South had its seed funding. And from the beginning, the idea was to create something new, not a knockoff of some other literary festival.
Now, why don't we try and do something different? And so we talked about where you could combine books with a lot of things. You could do books in politics. You could do books in the environment. You could do books in visual arts. But books in music kind of seemed kind of like the most natural thing to do. And so we set out to do, just sort of be different. And writers who write about music, musicians who are also writers. And it's been a good niche for us. There's really nothing exactly like this anywhere.
Nothing exactly like this. And it's not always easy. The first year, 2015, the lineup was absolutely awesome, in Mark's words, but it rained all weekend. They scrambled, they canceled some things, they crammed the writer Mary Gateskill into a room for 30 people when 200 had RSVP'd for her reading. But they also saw something they couldn't let go of. Pairings that only happen once in a lifetime.
We did these pairings, and so one of the first ones we did, we had the author Paul Beatty, who won the National Book Award, I believe, and this pianist from New York. And there, we almost canceled their event because we had to, move the pianos and a mess. And so we finally did it, and there were like 10 people there, including me. And but it was so awesome. And there's just another guy here I know, and he had taped it. And I said, you and I are the ones that know him. It was just so good. And so that was part of what, said, well, hey, we need to keep this going.
And that's the Word of South origin story. A little controversy, a little rain, and just enough magic to make it worth doing again and again. Word of South was never meant to be a museum of Southern music or literature. It was designed from the start to challenge musicians and writers to collaborate and innovate and to open the ears of the thousands of people who attend every year to learn about this region's new voices, new styles, and new ways of belonging. My first experience at Word of South came in 2017 when I was asked to participate in one of those collaborations. I was editing another publication at the time, and Mark Mustian asked me if I would consider helping him program one of the festival's six stages. We did that for the first time in 2018, and we did it again in 2019. Then the pandemic hit, and I left that other publication. Salvation South began publishing in November of 2021, and in April of 2022, we debuted the Salvation South stage at the Word of South Festival. Next month, April 23rd through 25th of 2026, we will be back for our fifth year. And the goal every year is to tell the hundreds of people who come into the big Salvation South tent something about the South they did not know, or to let them hear something they've never heard, or maybe to show them something that might look familiar to them but isn't. few people fit that looks one way but acts another model as well as this guy.
My name is BJ Barham. I am the lead singer of a band out of Raleigh, North Carolina called American Aquarium, and I'm here at the Word of South Festival to play a show with my band.
Folks might look at BJ and his flannel shirt and blue jeans and his high and tight haircut, which makes him look a little bit like an American dad circa 1958, and draw certain conclusions about him. But put him on stage and he and his band will prove those conclusions wrong. BJ writes and sings high voltage protest music that challenges the South to rise above its heritage of oppression.
Well, music that came from the South was always some form of protest music. Country music used to be, it would be called woke these days, you know, what we consider country music and folk music. You're rallying against something bigger than yourself. You're rallying against oppression. You're rallying against, you're coming together as people to sing about the problems you see in the world. And somewhere along the line, I'm going to say 80s, 90s, it quickly became about, you know, cold beer, dirt road, pretty girl, pickup truck. And it stopped being less about like, hey, how about we unionize? How about we all have kind of the same benefits as everybody else? How about we stop picking people out based on skin color and creed and religious preference? Like, how about we just all kind of try to exist together? What do you say? And I think that we're starting to see a lot more inclusivity in country music, which I think is amazing because country music has always been the voice of the people. And I think for a long time, especially the last couple decades, it's been the voice of, you know, mediocre white dudes. And so it's nice to see the tables kind of turn. As a mediocre white dude, I love that it's taking a turn to where it is quickly becoming the music of the people again. And that's a beautiful thing to be a part of.
BJ's phrase for what he plays is alternative country, a label that to him is less a genre tag than a raised fist.
Man, alternative country is a rallying cry. I know that Texans call it Texas country. Oklahomans call it red dirt. Folks in Tennessee call it Americana. In North Carolina, we call it all country. And that's exactly what it means. It's like, are you tired of the nonsense they're playing on the radio? Here's an alternative. If you like country music but don't like the bro aspect of it, here's another version of it. And I think it's just punk rock kids who got too old to play punk rock and fell in love with country music. And because there's that defiance of kind of punk rock, but it's got mandolins and banjos and fiddles and acoustic guitars. And I always joke with people, like, country music's just punk rock slowed down. You know, it's all just three chord songs about hating where you're from, your gal leaving you and drinking too much. BJ and American Aquarium are expanding what country music talks about. You can also walk to another corner of Cascades Park and meet a novelist from Orlando who is telling stories of people who used to get overlooked in Southern novels and hitting the New York Times bestseller list by doing so.
Kristen Arnett, and we are in Tallahassee, Florida.
At the Word of South Festival.
That's right, Word of South.
All right, so how did you come to be involved with this festival?
I've done the festival 2 years ago for my second novel, With Teeth, and I had a really good time there. I was paired up with a singer, Heather Maloney, and we did a thing where I'd read a little, and she'd sing a song in response, and then I'd read a little something, and she'd sing, and it was fun. So it's like one of those things where it's like a little friendly network. It almost feels like family a little bit, I think.
Kristen's last book is definitely Southern literature, but not as the old canon defined it. Her story is set in her hometown of Orlando, and its hero is someone she insists belongs in any honest picture of the South.
It's called Stop Me If You've Heard This One, and it's about a lesbian birthday party clown in Orlando, Florida, who is like very obsessed with clowning and wants to take her art to like the next level and like kind of level up as an artist while simultaneously like thinking about humor and what it means to be an artist in a place that people consider to be like tacky when it comes to things. I'm from Orlando and I love writing about Central Florida because I think it's a place that's very broad and holds a lot of different kinds of identities and people. I know people have a lot of associations with Orlando. They hear Orlando and they think immediately like Disney World or theme parks. It's like a hospitality industry, which means there's a lot of entertainers and performers living in Central Florida. And that means there's a lot of interesting, weird DIY creativity, which makes for like a really fun time and a lot of fun conversations.
If you ask Kristen whether Florida is really the South, she'll give you an answer that feels a lot like the festival itself, resistant to pigeonholes and insistently plural.
I think Florida's interesting because it refuses to be nailed down a little bit. So I think, yeah, sometimes it can be like this is like the South, but also, yeah, sometimes it's its own thing. Maybe that's what makes it so interesting to write about, is that it won't let you kind of name it. It's like too squirrely.
Yeah.
It's like a squirmy place that refuses to be like pigeonholed, maybe.
And inside that squirmy place, she says, queerness isn't an import, it's infrastructure.
Specifically Orlando, like what I was talking about in the book, is like it is built into the fabric of like the tourism and entertainment industry. Like those are people that work in like makeup, design, fashion, dance and theater, any of the stuff that's like people are going out, like, you know, to go see entertainment is stuff that's like most of the time formed and like handled by queer and trans people. So there's this idea that because we have a government that like is very red, is very conservative, is very pushing against like laws for trans and queer people, that would mean that people wouldn't want to live here or don't live here. And I would say that that's like faulty logic. We actually have like a ton of queer and trans people that live all over the state. I know that I have the opportunity to stay and be like an ambassador for like what it's like to be queer and live inside of Orlando. So that means I need to talk about it all the time. I need to be like a loud vocal person talking about being gay and living in Florida. Cause that gives me, I have a platform, and that means that people can maybe see that I'm gay and live there and be like, oh, there are people there that are like working, like living artists, like doing stuff. So it feels like very, very, very important for me, like not only to just like talk about it in like essays and different things, but also to like write it into my fiction.
From the main stage to the book tents, Word of South is full of people who don't fit the old postcard images of the South, but who claim it because it's their home, and who adamantly insist that even though their lives don't fit any of the old Moonlight and Magnolias stereotypes, they're just as Southern as you are, maybe even more so. After this short break, we'll rewind the clock to 2018, to a rainy Sunday when we had to collapse our tent and retreat into a dark nightclub corner of 5th and Thomas in Tallahassee. An unforgettable afternoon where we watched Donnie Fritz, who wrote hits for the likes of Percy Sledge, Dusty Springfield, and Kris Kristofferson, have a final hurrah before death took him only 1 year later. We'll be right back. One of the things I love most about having the Salvation South stage at Word of South is that every year, Mark Mustin and I get to play Mad Scientist. We look at a list of writers and musicians and ask, what kind of story could we tell if we put those two writers together? Or maybe that writer with this musician. Usually what happens is wonderful. Rarely it isn't, but even more rarely, you put a situation together that people wind up talking about for years afterward.
So the things I'm proudest of at Word of South are the things that you just can't see anywhere else, and this is one-of-a-kind stuff.
In 2018, we did exactly that.
Chuck has this idea to say, hey, why don't we bring, you know, do let's bring the Muscle Shoals guys down and do sort of a tribute to Muscle Shoals, you know, music.
In the early 1960s, in the days of Jim Crow segregation, Muscle Shoals, Alabama, was one of the three southern cities that were turning out hit records written and recorded by black and white musicians working together. The others were Memphis, Tennessee, and Macon, Georgia. My friend Patterson Hood, one of the founders of the rock band Drive-By Truckers, grew up in Muscle Shoals, and his father, David Hood, was the bass player in the legendary Muscle Shoals rhythm section. In 2018, another creator of the Muscle Shoals sound, the writer and keyboardist Donnie Fritz, was working on an album called June, a tribute to Arthur Alexander. You might never have heard of Arthur Alexander, a black songwriter and singer from Muscle Shoals, but in 1961, Alexander recorded a song he wrote called You Better Move On. It was a hit, and later, a British band chose to cover You Better Move On for their first album. I'm sure you've heard of them, the Rolling Stones. In the next year, Arthur recorded another of his songs in Muscle Shoals, Anna, Go to Him. Another British band chose Anna for its first album, and you've probably heard of them too, the Beatles. So we brought Patterson Hood and his dad, David, and Donnie Fritz, and another son of North Alabama, John Paul White, formerly of the duo The Civil Wars, and his band, To Word of South. And our intention was to tell the story of Muscle Shoals soul through interviews and music. We did that on Saturday, all afternoon, but on Sunday, a huge thunderstorm forced all six of the Word of South stages to relocate to indoor venues.
You know, I'm trying to make a circuit around to, you know, different, you know, venues because it's raining, make sure everything's okay. And so I catch the sound check at Fifth and Thomas for John Paul White singing this Arthur Alexander song. I'm thinking, man, this is good. And so later, you know, I called Chuck after the event and said, Chuck, I just telling you, I'm not making this up. People are still talking about this. I mean, it was awesome.
Donnie was one of, you know, there was a passel of young black and white songwriters, you know, creating soul music in Muscle Shoals in the early and in the mid-60s. And Donnie wrote this amazing song. There's a legendary soul album by the British singer Dusty Springfield called Dusty in Memphis, which had most of the Muscle Shoals guys playing on it. And Donnie wrote a song called Breakfast in Bed that was on that record, and it's a really sexy song. It's wonderful. And that was the end of that show at Fifth and Thomas that day was Donnie playing his old Wurlitzer piano, which he was a master of, and David Hood playing bass, and John Paul playing guitar, and Reed, John Paul's drummer, playing drums, and John Paul, he sings like an angel, sang Breakfast in Bed, and people's jaws were just on the floor.
That's what I heard the sound check of.
The air in that little nightclub felt electric. There was something else in the room that day, too, something quieter. I wanted to hear John Paul White's memories of Donnie Fritz from that day, so I called him up.
The first time I sat down and had an extended conversation with him, he played that song Errol Flynn, which is on Oh My Goodness that we made. And he didn't write Errol Flynn, but when he played it, I would have sworn it was his life. And it sounded like his songs, and it was just brilliant. And he was crying by the end of it. It was the first song he even played for me. He barely knew me. And I was crying too. There's a very short chord between his heart and his tear ducts. He is always on his sleeve.
It felt like the entire audience's emotions that afternoon were as raw as Donnie's, because for Donnie, it wasn't just another show.
I think what it meant to Donnie made what made more difference than what it meant to me ultimately was derived from what it meant to Donnie. Donnie had spent so much of his career feeling underappreciated, and was always second fiddle to Chris Christopherson as his side guy. Never complained about that, but you sense this hunger when I first met him, this need to show people, this need to have a legacy, this need to have something lasting left behind.
And that afternoon in Tallahassee, for just a little while, he did exactly that. In a way, that's what Word of South is for, to give overlooked people a stage and to give old comrades one more night to do what only they can do in front of a crowd who, when they walked in, had no idea how lucky they were about to be. Your face is a
mess. We don't have recording of that day inside that club, but John Paul White and Donnie Fritz did record themselves doing Breakfast in Bed, and they released it only as a limited edition 45 on vinyl.
Don't be shy, you've been here before. Pull your shoes off, lie down, and I'll lock the door. And no one has to know you come here again. Darling, it will be like it's always been before. Breakfast in bed and a kiss at three. You don't have to say you love me.
Another Word of South moment knitted together music and literature in a way none of us could have planned. It began with a Southern novel about a very unusual machine. Midtown Reader, a beloved local bookstore in Tallahassee, worked with the Word of South staff on an event called One Book Tally. The idea was that the whole Tally community would read one book whose author would appear at the next Word of South. One of their picks was a book called The Big Door Prize by a Baton Rouge, Louisiana native named M.O. Walsh.
So basically, it's a book. It's set in a small town in Louisiana. It's a made-up town called Deerfield, Louisiana. And basically what happens is one day at the local grocery store, this kind of strange machine just shows up. It looks kind of like a photo booth that you'd see at like a fair, right? But what it says it can do is it says for only $2, it can analyze your DNA and tell you what your potential in life could be, right? And so what happens basically is people start in this small town trying it and getting really surprising results. I've always been under the impression that like a vast majority of people on the planet probably have no idea what they could be great at because they never had any reason to try it, right? And so I love that idea, and I was like, well, what would it be like if someone could just like whisper in your ear, you know, like, you know what, you'd be really great at this.
M.O. Walsh's initials stand for Milton O'Neill Walsh. His friends just call him Neil. And what Neil will tell you about the Big Door Prize is that it is secretly a 360-page love letter to the late great songwriter John Prine. All the chapters borrow their titles from Prine's lyrics, and his songs hum under the whole story. And the characters in Neil Walsh's fictional Deerfield, Louisiana, speak in a way that mirrors the plain-spokenness of Prine's lyrics.
my relationship with John Prine's music came late in life. I was in graduate school in Tennessee, and I started dating this girl. And, I would invite her, to come to my apartment. And this is not going to get weird. This is not going to get weird. I would invite her to come to my apartment because I was trying to impress her. And at this time, I was learning how to play the guitar. Anyway, I'm doing this, and one day she looks at me, and she's like, "Don't you know any John Prine songs? Like, just something simple?" I had never heard of him in my life, right? I'd never heard of John Prine. I was like, no. And as soon as she left, I was like, "John, who's John Prine?" Like, Googling it. And so it turned out it was her dad sang John Prine songs to her when she was kind of coming up. And it had this sort of feel to her, and it was very simple music that she really liked a lot. And so then I went and started listening to him, and I quickly fell in love with his music, and mainly his writing. I just think he's one of my favorite writers. It doesn't matter the genre. I love the way he writes. He is also hopeful, but can be very earnest and sad. He could break your heart, make you laugh in the same song, which is incredible dexterity and flexibility as a writer that I really admire. And so that girl is now my wife, right? So we've been married. Yeah, we've been married for over 20 years now, and we still go out on the back porch and play John Prine songs together.
The Big Door Prize, which was published in September of 2020, later became an Apple TV series that lasted 2 seasons, and then a community-wide read in Tallahassee, and finally, because this is Word of South, it collided with John Prine's own family. Here's the voice of our producer.
All right, man, so could you start off by saying what your name is and what you're doing here?
Yeah, my name is Tommy Prine, and I'm here to play songs.
We had convened a panel of songwriters for an onstage song swap and discussion, and Tommy Prine, John's son, was one of our guests on that panel. We also knew that before the Big Door Prize came out, Neil Walsh wrote a letter to John Prine to thank him for the inspirations that his songs had provided. And Neil's plan was to send that letter to Prine with an autographed copy of the book. But sadly, John Prine died of COVID in April of 2020, 5 months before the Big Door Prize came out. So I invited Neil to help me moderate that songwriters panel, and that gave Neil a chance to deliver the letter and the book to John Prine's son, Tommy. Tommy talked to us about how his father's music has that effect on people.
I mean, my dad's music, I think most people tell you this, like, kids love it, but I think that there is an aspect of my father's music, especially his lyrics, that don't really hit until you have a little bit of life under your belt, you know? So it was like the first time I got my heart broken is when I was listening to my dad sing a song, and I like started tearing up, and I was like, this has never happened before. I'm like, what is this? And ever since then, like 15 or 16 and on, you know, like albeit a little life experience at that time, just I think if you have any sort of common human experience thing, like heartbreak or having like a big argument with a friend or just kind of any sort of big emotion you haven't dealt with before, my dad's music is so good at walking you through that because it's like, oh, wait, someone else has done it before, you know, and I'll be all right.
Before we let Tommy Prine go that day, our producer asked him one more question, the one that hangs over everything we do at Salvation South and everything we do on the Salvation South stage at the Word of South Festival.
You know, my show is Salvation South. We're here at the Word of South Festival. What does it mean to you to be a Southerner?
To be a Southerner, man, I think to be a Southerner means that you have a responsibility to open your heart to everyone you meet.
A responsibility to open your heart to everyone you meet. For a festival that began with tainted money and controversial headlines, that sounds like a fine mission statement. In Cascades Park every April, you can watch Southern artists make things together that will never be repeated. This year, the Salvation South stage will be back at the Word of South Festival. And we got 2 days of programming coming up, the first of which will be dedicated to the writers and musicians of Appalachia. And it will feature former Kentucky poet laureate and best-selling novelist Silas House and the founder of the Afro-Latchian Poets, Frank X. Walker. The other day will bring the poet laureate of Alabama, Jacqueline Allen Trimble, into conversation with a generation younger punk rock poet from Birmingham, Lee Baines III, into a conversation together, after which Lee will pick up his guitar and sing, and then we'll end the day with a performance by a wonderful musician from Tennessee named Amethyst Kaya, whose music resists any attempt to pigeonhole her. Now, many of these artists have been our guests here on Salvation South Deluxe, so you might already know their wonderful work, but what will happen when they come together? You're going to have to come to Tallahassee on the weekend of April 23rd to find out. Word of South is messy, but it's magical, as Mark likes to say. It's a place where we don't start with an agenda, but with the desire to experiment. We just take a book or an essay or a poem, and we rub it up against a song, like a genie would rub their lamp, and we see what happens. Thanks to my friends, Mark Mustigan, B.J. Barham, Kristen Arnett, Emma Walsh, and Tommy Prine for their generosity and their words and their music. Thanks to the volunteers, librarians, bookstore owners and clerks, college and high school students, and city workers who make Word of South possible. We must also thank Jeremy Powell, who produced this episode and also serves as Georgia Public Broadcasting's Director of Podcasts. I also want to thank Sandy Malcolm and Bert Wesley Huffman at GPB for their ongoing support of what we do at Salvation South. You've been listening to Salvation South Deluxe, produced in cooperation with Georgia Public Broadcasting and its network of stations around the state. You can find us and a whole lot more stories about this complicated region at SalvationSouth.com. I'm Chuck Reese. We'll be back next month with another deluxe look at the American South. Until then, why don't we just take Tommy Prine's advice and let's just open our hearts to everyone we meet.